So what do we have for today? I call this Yashir versus Akif. Direct or indirect. The structure that we want to present is a case where you have A, B, and C. And C is going to be linked up to A. And B in the middle is playing the role of what I call a vav, you know, a hook. And then the chakir becomes the following. What's the relationship between C and A? Or if you could formulate it differently, what role does B play? One way of defining it is to say that there's a direct relationship between A and C, and B is only there to hook them together. That's what I call yashir, meaning a direct relationship. The other way of saying it is no, that B actually is in the driver's seat. But what B does is it passes on whatever rights that it gained from A over to C. But it doesn't go directly from A to C, it goes through the agency of B.
There's no B you couldn't get from A to C.
Well, that's for sure. In both studim, you must have B to get from A to C. But the question is, does B play a role over here? Do we have to reckon with B? Or is B just playing a role simply to link up A and B, excuse me, A and C, and then we have a direct relationship between A and C? Let me give an example. If you have a grandfather, a son, and a grandson, and we're going to formulate obligations on the grandfather vis-a-vis his grandson, does it go through the agency of his son? As long as his son is there to pick up those obligations, then he, the son, passes it on to his son, which means grandfather, grandson, but it always goes through the agency of the son. Or do we say no? The son is just there to reveal, like sort of a Gili Milsa, that there's a relationship between the grandfather and the grandson, and now it becomes a direct relationship. The Gemara says that a grandfather has to teach his grandson Torah. Is it fundamentally a chiv to teach his son Torah? But since his son has a chiv to teach his son, that chiv in the middle links up the grandfather with the grandson. But is the son playing a role? Like, let's say, for example, there is no son. You know, halach lo olam o nevach. So do we still link up the grandfather with the grandson, or does it have to go through the agency of the son? The son is the one who really is the object receiving the chiyuv. He's being toveah, and he passes it on to his son. We'll see, for example, in Yerusha. Let's say a son inherits his father. What happens if the son is not alive to inherit his father? So we have a concept called mishmush nachla. And that means that the son inherits his father even though the son is no longer alive, in such a way that he passes on the Yerusha to his son. Do I view that as a direct relationship between the grandfather and the grandson, or do I say no? It's the son who really picks up the Yerusha and he passes it on to his son. So it always goes through that agency in the middle, and that middle B, I call it, is going to play a major role. For example, in Kibud Av Va'em, there's halach that not only am I obligated to be mechabi my mother, I have to be mechabi my mother's husband, who's not my father. That's called Kvod Avi, Kvod Baal Imo. Now what happens after my mother goes? Do I still have to respect my stepfather? Do I say no? I only have to respect my stepfather through the agency of my mother. As long as she's alive, that hooks me up to her husband. But if she's gone, I no longer have that hook. What other example can I give? Again, we're going to have many, many sugyas, but I just want to give you a sense of what we're talking about. Well, let's say, for example, Levi borrows money from Shimon. And Shimon borrows money from Reuven. Now, technically, Reuven could be Tovea Shimon, he can't be Tovea Levi, but there's something called Maimon Shloshtam. And in Maimon Shloshtam, that allows Reuven to collect his chov directly from Levi, because Levi, let's say it's 100, right? So Levi owes 100 to Shimon. Shimon owes 100 to Reuven. Reuven now, instead of collecting that 100 from Shimon, he collects from Levi through the mechanism of Maimon Shloshtim. Now, where does Shimon fit into the picture? Is Shimon just simply a hook that links up Reuven and Levi, or no? The obligation of Reuven is to pay Shimon. He doesn't have a direct via. Reuven doesn't have a direct via on Levi. And the nafka mina is going to be, let's say, if the chov between Levi and Shimon, Shimon's the middleman here, if that chov is broken up, for example, if Shimon would be mochel a chov to Levi, then Reuven no longer has rights. Or do we say no? Once the Maimon Shloshtim took place, and we link up Levi back to Reuven, Shimon is out of the picture. Shimon only plays a role to, in a sense, generate or facilitate that linkage between A and C, between Reuven and Levi, and now Shimon could be out of the picture. So today what I want to do is mention a few sugyas, but one sugya that I want to learn with you is Mishmush Nachla. And here we have, in Kovet Shiurim in Bava Basra, which I photocopied for you, and it's on the left side of your page, Shin Lamed Gimel, in Rebbe Elchanan. He says, B'mishmush nachla, yesh lachar, im hasheni hames. Okay, so what does it mean, the sheni? We have Reuven, the grandfather, we have Shimon, the son, and we have Levi, the grandson. And Shimon dies. So in the natural, normal Seder HaYerusha, Shimon would have inherited his father, Reuven, but in this case, Shimon is gone. So the law is that even though Shimon is dead already, Zoche Bekever, B'nichsei HaRishon, Vashlishi Yoresh Me'asheni. According to the first formulation, in this Chakira, again, Rabbi Chana is going to offer a second formulation, what happens is that there's a concept called Zchus Yerusha. Now, it's very interesting because Zchus Yerusha is radically different than any other monetary rights that we know of. Meaning, if Shimon, you know, Shimon's dead, and a dead man cannot acquire ownership on property, what a dead man can do, according to this first formulation of Rabbi Chanan, is he can exercise his rights. Again, it's a funny phrase to talk about someone who's no longer alive, but he has rights to inheritance. And how do those rights express itself? It doesn't mean that his father's possessions are now going to enter into his bank account. He's gone already. But the right to Yarshin, his father, is now passed on through the Kever to his son, that's Levi, such that Levi can now inherit Reuven. So again, in this particular formulation, Rabbi Chanan is saying that the Yerusha really goes through Shimon. Shimon is not out of the picture. He's not just a relative that facilitates Mishmush and links up Reuven and Levi, but rather that Shimon himself, Bekever, is Zoch in this Yerusha, and then Levi, the Shlishi, is Yoresh Mesheni. He inherits that rights of Yerusha from Shimon. Oh, now we get to the second side, which is going to be a direct link between Reuven and Levi. Oh, Efshar Diena Sheni Zocha Klal B'Nichsei Arishon. The Sheni has no rights whatsoever to acquire anything in Reuven, his father's property. Dien Kinyi Lames. And Ein Kinyi Lames here in the second formulation of Rebbe Chanan means that even Zchus Yerusha cannot be Kona. Just like he can't be Kona any monetary rights, he cannot be Kona even rights to an inheritance, insofar as that's also a monetary right. Also, what's Mishmush Nachla according to the second Pshat? Hashlishi Yoresh Nichsei HaRishon. This is a fascinating concept, that Levi, the grandson, steps into his father's shoes, so to speak, and basically all Shimon is doing is he's facilitating Levi, his son's ability to now become a direct Yoresh from the grandfather. He replaces his father. So the father is out of the picture. The only role that the father plays here is to engender in the Shlishi, in his son, a status of a Sheni. Do you follow what he's saying? I think if I understand correctly, Rabbi Chanan is saying that now the Shlishi becomes a Sheni.
So he becomes the equivalent if there are other brothers involved.
Right, then we'll have to
equal part.
Right, we'll have to split it up equally. But whatever his father would have had, that's what he has. But he has it directly as if he was his father. Kevan Shasheni royally Rashes Arishon, since the Sheni, had he been alive, could inherit his father, whatever portion he would get. El Shein Lo Koch Lizkos, he cannot be Zocha in any shape or form in the Nechasim. So it doesn't really, it doesn't go as a two-stage process, meaning it's not that Shimon inherits Reuven in the second formulation of Elchanan, and then Levi inherits Shimon, his father. No. It means that Levi is inheriting Reuven directly. She'ein lo koch lizkos demes ein bo zchiyah vashlishi omeid bimkomo v'roim es hasheni ki'ilu zocha b'nichsei harishon lahorish l'shlishi. So it means that the Shlishi now, since the Sheni gives the Shlishi his portion or his status within the Seder HaYerusha, the Shlishi now gains the ability to be Yoresh from his grandfather, from the Rishon. So again, in the first definition of Rabbi Chanan, it means that the Shlishi inherits the Sheni, and the Sheni inherits the Rishon. In the second formulation, no, the Shlishi inherits the Rishon as a Sheni. The Shlishi becomes a Sheni. Now, what I'd like to do, this is my goal for this morning, is to list nafkaminas between this chakira. In other words, on a very abstract level, okay, it's a good chakira, but tachlis, what does it mean? So I just want to show you, if you can, sort of like make a note, like underline the word venirah, because I want to come back to that. I want to fast forward to the next paragraph, ma, because I think that in a sense will give us a clear-cut nafkamina. The other nafkaminas are somewhat sophisticated and subtle. This one is quite obvious. He says the following. One second. Wait a minute. Where's the piece about Mumar. Okay, Yiba, we'll get to Mirtz Hashem. You see it?
Halfway down the paragraph.
Halfway Masha Hikshenu? That paragraph?
Masha, yeah.
Okay.
It's the first word on the line.
Oh, there it is. Hamumar. Okay, Shkoy. He quotes here a Rishon by the name of Rabbeinu Simcha Barav Shmuel in Shut Maram Barav Baruch. Afilu l'divrei ha-gaonim demumar eino yoresh es aviv. Again, this is a sugya unto itself, but not for us. But anyway, there's one shita in the gaonim that mumar eino yoresh es aviv. Now what happens? The mumar, who cannot inherit his father, has a son, who's his grandfather's grandson, obviously, right? So he's Ben Amumar. And the question now becomes, can he inherit his grandfather? His father is a Mumar, he could not inherit his grandfather. So he says, Ben Amumar Yoresh Eskeno Minatora. Why? Says Rabbeinu Simcha di Omar, because the grandson declares, Mikoch avua di abba kasino. I come from the koch of my grandfather. Dechsiv, because the pasuk says, Tachas avusecha yubanecha. In other words, I now replace my father in order to become a yoresh of my grandfather. So again, there's a lot more to discuss here in this paragraph. I'm pulling out these few lines because, at least in my mind, I thought this was a kind of profound example of this chakir.
You could say the other way as well. You could say that the son, who's the mumma,
right,
really is God's chus yerusha, and the fact is mumma cancels it.
In other words, it's like the chus yerusha exists, but there's a blockage.
Yeah, that's right.
So you're right. I think he's assuming the Rabbeinu Simcha is assuming that if Mishmush Nachla, at least this is the way Rabbi Yochanan I think understands this Rabbeinu Simcha, that if Mishmush Nachla means that basically the we'll call it the Yoresh Rishon, who's the, right, he's the middle guy, the Sheni. If he inherits, I'm sorry, did I call him the Yoresh Rishon? That's what I meant to call him the Yoresh Rishon. Yeah, okay. That the Yoresh Rishon, and he inherits, then and only then, after he inherits his father, can he pass on the Yerusha to the Yoresh Sheni. So he's not entering into the issue of what we call temporary blockage, you know, that we've discussed in the past. He wants to know whether or not the Yoresh Rishon, who's the Mumar in this case, the son, can pick up the Yerusha. If he can pick up the Yerusha, then and only then could he pass it on to the Yoresh Sheni, which would be the first tzad in Rabbi Chana. Now, since the Yoresh Rishon in this case is a Mumar, and the Shita Sagonim is that a Mumar doesn't inherit his father, and that's a Doraisa Halacha, then since he doesn't pick up the Yerusha, he can't pass it on. And that's what he quotes, Ana, what does he say? Mikoach Avua Di Abba Kasina, that I come Mikoach, my grandfather. And he quotes the Pasuk Tachas Avosecha. But you're right. I mean, one could have argued that the Yerusha as a Tzchus still applies to a Mumar. He's not Mufka from a Tzchus Yerusha. He's Mufka from Tzchia Yerusha, Befal. And that Tzchus Yerusha he could pass on to his son. But I think you could see in the language of Rabbeinu Simcha, which is not Rabbi Chana, this is Rabbeinu Simcha, he seems to clearly want to link up the grandson with his grandfather. Right. That I thought was a fascinating nafkamina. Now let's go back to Venira in the first paragraph. Venira raya lepirush zeh mehadakarov haroi lirash posuliyet. So if you learn Masechta Sanhedrin, which addresses the question of who can testify and who's disqualified for testimony. One of the major categories of disqualification is a karov. How do you define a karov? Because, you know, you could have someone who's related, the second cousins. I mean, is that also posuliyetus? So the Gemara establishes that there's a hekesh between the parish of Edus and the parish of Yerusha. Who's ever considered a karov, and he's royal lirash, he is called a karov, and he's posuliyetus. That's the Mishnah Rishon in Sanhedrin. Again, we're not going to learn the Mishnah Chorona right now, although we probably should, but we'll suffice. This will be sufficient. Or Pirish Rashi, we're talking about Ben Achoso. So in other words, a nephew wants to testify on his uncle. Who is his uncle? So let's say, for example, my sister has a son, right? He's my nephew through my sister, and he wants to testify on my behalf, on behalf of his uncle, his mother's brother. So Rashi says he's posuliyetus. Why is he posuliyetus? Because he's royally arsha. In other words, the nephew could inherit his uncle. Now, how could a nephew inherit his uncle? The answer is that let's say both his uncle and his mother died. And let's say his uncle has no other yorshim other than his mother. So then he will be yoresh his mother bekever, which is another way of saying mishmush nachla. So Rabbi Chana wants to understand Mishmush Nachla, that's wonderful, but that doesn't set up a kurva relationship between the nephew and his uncle. He's just inheriting that which his mother inherited. In Cain, hu yoreshes imo, if you're going to go with the first formulation of Rabbi Chanan, that whatever the middle person, right, the Yoresh Rishon inherits is passed on to the Yoresh Sheni. So the Yoresh Sheni is inheriting the Yoresh Rishon, but not the grandfather, in this case not his uncle. In Kenu Yoresh is Imo, Velo es Achi Imo. So he's not inheriting his uncle. Why would that be considered a kurva to Pasal Hilyedus? So we have now two nafkaminas. Nafkamina number one is if you hold like the Gaonim that a Mumar does not inherit his father, what about the Mumar's son? And the answer is it should depend upon these two tzadim. If we go with the second side, then we link up the grandson with his grandfather directly, then despite the fact that his father would not inherit because his father's a Mumar, he would inherit. The second nafkamina is, can we derive a psul kurva through Mishmash Nachla? If Mishmash Nachla simply generates a direct Yerusha, that means we're talking about Krovin. If it's not a direct Yerusha, so I inherit my mother, and she inherited her brother, what does that have to do with my relation to my uncle? That can't be considered a Kurv. Now he gets to a third Nafkimi. And this has to do with the laws of Ben Kodem Labas. The question is, how do we derive, in the case of Mishmash Nachla, the Kedima of Ben Labas? So the Gemara establishes in Baba Basra, he doesn't tell you what daf it's on, so we'll have to find it. He says, V'od the Iskash, the Gemara has a Hekesh between Yerusha Shnia and Yerusha Rishona. Now, Yerusha Shnia is the Mishmush. Yerusha Rishon is the direct Yerusha. And the Gemara says that just like in the first Yerusha, Ben Kodem Labas, so too in the case of Yerusha Shnia, Ben Kodem Labas. So let's say you have two grandchildren. You have a grandson and a granddaughter. And the parent, let's say the father of the boy and the girl, is gone. And the grandfather now dies. And the halacha is that the grandson inherits and the granddaughter does not. And that's derived from a special hekesh between Yerusha Rishon and Yerusha Shnia. Pirshu Tosfos, the Yerusha Shnia hainu mishmush. Zok Rabbi Chanan, I neimo da mes zoche bekever. If we're going to say, like the first formulation, that the mess is the one that, even though he's dead, he inherits at least the Schus Yerusha. And then through that Schus Yerusha, he bequeaths it. He's morish it to the Yorisheni. If that be the case, then this whole discussion is totally irrelevant. Because then the Yorisheni is just picking it up from his father. And therefore, the Bas, or in this case call it the granddaughter if you will, is out of the picture. Why do you need a Hekesh? He says, "E named HaMes Zoche Bekever is Leolam Hibi Yerusha Rishona." Basically, according to the first sign, the Yoresh Sheni is really slipping into the shoes of the Yoresh Rishona. It's a Yerusha Rishona. Is therefore Ben Yoresh Esaviv Oes Imo? Really, the grandson is inheriting his father or his mother. And therefore, of course, the Bas is out of the question. Because in Yerusha Rishona, we know that there's Kedimas HaBen LaBas. V'lo Itzrich HaKesha. And we shouldn't require a Hekesh. This, on a technical level, this is a really classical case of why do we need a Yalfusa? Meaning, what was the Haba meaning before the Yalfusa? You know, I was thinking to myself that maybe we wouldn't need this Yalfusa except because of the possibility of the second side. In other words, if you go with the second side in Rabbi Chanan's Chakira, then it would come out that the Yoresh Sheni is a direct relationship to the original Morish. And now I don't know if there's halacha ben v'lovas, because the whole new parasha Yerusha, Yorisheni. And the Kamashmal and the Hekish said, no, we go back to the first son, Rabbi Chanan, that there is no such thing as a Yoresh Sheni. It's always going to be a Yoresh Rishon. In any event, what happens here is that Rabbi Chanan's claiming, again, just to summarize, because this is the third Nafkamina, again, it's not a Nafkamina Lamaisa, but it's a Nafkamina in terms of establishing a Havamina.
It's more a Raya than that.
It's a Raya, correct. It's not really Nafkamina. I'm going to call it a Nafkamina because I have a vested interest in calculating nafkaminas here, but it's a theoretical nafkamina. And that is, would the halach of kedimas ben labas, if we didn't have a hekesh, right, would that apply in the case of mishmash nachla? And the answer is, it depends. If you're reviewing as a new parsha of Yerusha, which means that there's some sort of direct relationship between, we'll call it the grandfather and the grandson, then we don't know if the Gzeres HaKosav of Ben Velo Bas applies. But if it's not a new parish of Yerusha, he becomes the Yorish Rishon, because first the Yerusha passes on to his father. His father died and he's Morish and Bekever. Then I don't need any sort of Hekesh, and it's obvious and clear that Ben is Kodem Labas, because it's not a new parish of Yerusha. Okay. So that's the third nafkamina. Oh, now we get to, I think, a more sophisticated nafkamina, and that's Yibum. Oh, let's say, for example, if a married man dies childless, then his brother is the Yavam, and his wife needs Yibum. She's Zukuka Velmedes Yibum, correct? Now, let's say that this person who died had a son, but his son died. So if his son died, Nebuch, then the din of Yibum goes back into play. So Umes Eimla. Yeah. Now, it's not enough that he had once a child. He has to have a child alive today. Okay then? Now, let's say his son died, but his son left the son. So then there's no din of Yibum. Oh. So Tosis has a chiddush. Again, unfortunately, it doesn't tell you where the Tosis is. We'll have to find it. That Ben HaBen Potem MiYibum says Tosis the Alfina Minachla. As I state in Tosis. And Tosis says, what do we learn from Nachla? The Ben HaBen Yorish Eskeno. So l'chora, that halacha, as far as Yibum is concerned, really depends on this chakira. If what we're saying is there's a direct relationship between the grandson and his grandfather, Nicha, then I can understand that once we've derived that conclusion from the parasha of Yerusha, we can apply it to the parasha of Yibum, you know, if we have the proper tools to do so. But if we're going to say is that there's halacha of Yerusha, which the son, even after his death, his own death, he inherits his father, Bekever. So then that doesn't prove a thing about the relationship between the grandson and his grandfather.
It's more than that. If we said that, Svara,
yeah,
you have to say there's no Yibum, but the son's died, because he's got certain chosim, even the Kever. So even the Yibum shouldn't apply. But there was no grandson. And the other son and the son died.
Right. There's no grandson. And who died?
The son had died.
The son died. And there's no grandson. And there's no grandson.
There's no grandson. But
so then for sure there's Yibum.
But except if you're saying that Svara,
yeah,
then there is a schus of the son of the Kever to be married to the grandson, then the main thing, there shouldn't be Yibum in such a case.
Because he's still alive?
It's as if he's got some sort of existence.
I hear.
Not enough existence to have a son.
It's existed, yeah. So again, I think this is nafkamina number four.
The sperm was frozen.
This is nafkamina number four. Again, it's more of a theoretical nafkamina, you know, in concept. The question only, how do we derive that if there's a ben aben, then he pot his grandfather from Yibum? I mean, he pot his aunt from Yibum, right? But if you're going to learn it from Nachla the way Tosin says it, that only would make sense if Mishmash Nachla is a direct relationship. If it's halacha that the son inherits and then his son inherits him, that doesn't prove a thing about his replacing his father in the relationship to his grandfather in order to pater from Yibum. Eich nilmad mizeli in Yibum to ben aben poter. Okay. Now he quotes a Ramah. The taima, the ena ben yoreshes imo bekever. Okay. Now, here's halacha. There's halacha that a wife inherits her husband. Okay, that's a complicated halacha. That has to deal with the laws of ksuba. Okay. Now, what happens if there are different, a person has sons from one wife and sons from another wife, right? They're half-brothers through their father. Now, the mother of one of these two sons dies. Okay, the mother of one of these two sons dies. And this son of this mother, who's a paternal brother, well, we'll call him Reuven and Shimon, right? Reuven and Shimon are brothers through the same father, and they have different mothers. So Shimon's mother dies, and now Shimon wants to inherit his mother, Bekever, to take that portion that she would have inherited and pass it on to his brother. Mishum di'ach eno karov le'imo. Now, the other brother, we'll call him Reuven, although he's Shimon's brother through the same father, but he's not related to Shimon's mother at all. So the Ramah says that in such a case, since Shimon is inheriting his mother, who is no shape or form related to Reuven, his brother, he cannot inherit his mother Bekever to pass on that Yerusha to his brother. So Rabbi Chanan asks, Mabakach, I don't understand the logic of the Ramah. Hare es achiv hu yoresh, velo es em achiv. In other words, Reuven is going to inherit his brother Shimon, who in turn inherited from his mother. So since Reuven is a brother to Shimon, what difference does it make if he's not related to Shimon's mother? As long as he's related to Shimon, he should be Yoresh Shimon. The answer seems to be that Mashma, the Shlishi Yoresh, mi Nichsei Rishon, velo Nichsei Sheni. It would seem, therefore, that the numbers here are a little bit confusing. The Shlishi, that means Reuven, Yoresh Minichsei Rishon, that we have to, in order to achieve Mishmush, we have to set up a direct relationship. And we cannot set up a direct relationship between Reuven and Shimon's mother, or Reuven and his stepmother, if you will, right, his father's mother, because he's not related to his father's mother.
So Zerah, you're not married to Bekever.
Correct. So basically, if I understand correctly, how many, I don't remember what number we're up to, we're at four? So we have four nafkiminas, and they're all indicative of the fact that it's not that the Yoresh Rishon, who's Shimon, is Yoresh Bekever, but rather Shimon just links up Levi with his grandfather Reuven. Again, it doesn't have to be a grandfather, whatever the Mishmash relationship is.
Genetic link.
Correct, the genetic link. And now we have the following nafkiminas. Number one, even if Shimon could not be Yoresh his father, Levi will be Yoresh his grandfather, and that's the Gaon of Abed Mumar. The second nafkimina is going to be that we could derive halacha psulei edus. And who is a karov who's possibly edus from the laws of nachla, of mishmush? But that only makes sense if you have a direct link between the father and the grandfather, or let's say my sister's son, who's my nephew, and me. He's a karov to be made on his uncle because he would inherit me directly through my sister, not that he inherits my sister. Right? The third nafkamina was that we would not need a hekesh to establish that. What was the third nafkamina again? I just want to get this clear, because I didn't have the sefer on the plane. You understand? I landed last night. Ben Kodem Labas. So again, what's Ben Kodem Labas? Let's say when the grandson and the granddaughter come together to inherit their grandfather, and she says, I have the same rights as my brother, because I'm a granddaughter no less than he's a grandson. She is Lechora claiming this new parsha of Yerusha in which her father links her up to with a direct link to her grandfather. And if we need a Gzeres HaKosov, in this case a Hekesh, to prove no, she doesn't Yarshin, but he does, because it's a new parish of Yerusha. And the fourth Nafkamin again, which is theoretical, and that's the Ramah, that the Ramah says that the reason why the Yerusha of Reuven's stepmother does not go to Reuven is because he's not linked up with his stepmother. But if we would say that what? That basically Shimon, and that makes sense since Shimon inherits his mother, and Shimon cannot pass on that Yerusha to Reuven because Reuven's not related to... That if Shimon is related to his mother and he inherits the mother, even though Shimon is gone, then Reuven would inherit Shimon. He's not inheriting Shimon's mother, he's inheriting it directly from Shimon. He says, V'tisyashev kushas k'tzos hachoshen ve'agon Rabbi Kiveg. Okay, so in order to understand this, this is already nafkamina number 5. What I'd like to do is take a look at the Encyclopedia Talmudit, because Rabbi Chanan doesn't quote his sources here. Let's see if we can find it. Does it tell you there by chance, because I didn't make enough copies, so I didn't leave myself a copy. Does it tell you what page it's on? Or what footnote it's on? Reish Samach Vav? Okay, give me a second here. Reish Samach Vav. Okay. And which footnote is it? Only because there are 1,000 different footnotes here. What's the top footnote? But no, but just give me the number.
1764.
Okay, that helps. Okay. Hamanchil li echad habonim. You have that?
Yeah.
Okay. Hamanchil li echad habonim shal bino shemes pechayov. Okay, so we're talking about a grandfather and a grandson. Shekol hanechadim boyim mikoach mishmush nachla me'avim shebekever. Umanchil zekenom li echad mehem v'chayotzim bozer. Nechleku hachronim. Yesh akosuv she'ein dvorov kayon. She'ein lo koach lahanchil el mishu yoresh mikocho. V'lo le'ele she'yoresh mikoach avim. Okay, let's just, again, there are a lot of deep concepts here, but on a superficial level, someone could choose one of his various yarshim during his lifetime. He could choose and specify one of his yarshim to the exclusion of the other yarshim. That koch he has. But he cannot completely exclude all of his yarshim and pick up some alien person off the street and say, I'm being manchil, give him my ton. But through koach hanachla, he cannot be manchil, a zar, to the exclusion of all his yarshim. He can choose one of his yarshim, but not the other. But not a zar. Now, what happens if a grandfather chooses one of his grandsons? So he says, Yesha kosu she'ein dvar v'kayom. That's not valid. Why? She'ein lo koch lahanchil elami lemishu yoresh v'kocho. He could choose one of his sons because that son would inherit directly from him. But v'lo le'ela she'yoresh v'kocho aviyah. The relationship here in Yerusha is not between the grandfather and the grandson, but between the grandson and his father. When we came to Yorash Aviyam Bekever, is Memela Yorashim Kula Mikocha. In other words, the way that Yerusha works is that it goes through the Kever, but it doesn't go directly back to the grandfather. And he quotes this in the name of the Machne Chaim. I can't tell you who that is. The Af Hamanchil Liach Bein Ha'achim. Okay. Now, L'chora, in the case of one Ach amongst many Achim, that's a direct Yerusha. So this whole discussion should be irrelevant. But La Sovrim, and this is going to be the Ramban if I'm not mistaken, let me see if I'm right, 1766. Okay, he says the Ayin Tzion 366. Just one second. 366. Well, half the book is just this Yerusha, which doesn't surprise me. 366. Oh, Begeder HaYerusha Shal. We'll come back to where we are in the middle. We're in the middle now. But Begeder HaYerusha Shal Achim. Nechelku Rishonim, Yesh Sofrim, Shehi Mitam, Mishmush Nachla, 366. Ramban. He quotes the Ramban. If somebody could note this, the Ramban is in Bamidbar Chav Zayin, Posuk Tes. Okay, that should be Parshas Matos. Okay. Then he tells you, look in the Ramban, it is Chidushim Abba Basra. There the Ramban says, Yorshim Mikoch Atzma. Okay. Sha'avi HaMes Yoresh Esbino Bakever Umimenu Ba Nachal Achim Shehim Bon. So what happened over here? One of the brothers passes on, and now the Nachla is being passed on to his surviving brothers. So how does that work? So according to Ramban, what happens is that the father, who's already gone, inherits his son, because Av Yorish Espino, Bakever in this case, and passes it on to his children. So that is Mishmush Nachla. That's Ramban Sheet. Shavi Ames, right, so one of the brothers dies. Let's say, for example, Reuven dies, and Yaakov, who's already gone, inherits Reuven Bekever, and then it passes on to his Yaakov's other children, in this case, Shimon, Levi, etc. That's called Mishmush Nachla. Mikocha Avim Yorshi. Shehem Zera Avi Ames. Okay, so let's hold on to 366, and now we go back to 1766. So again, according to this school of thought, if let's say the grandfather specified one of his grandchildren to the exclusion of the other, one of his grandsons to the exclusion of the others, to inherit him, would that have an impact? Would that be valid for the Yerusha of one of his sons who died? So Yaakov says that he wants Chanoch ben Reuven to inherit him, to the exclusion of all his other grandsons. And now Reuven dies, and Yaakov dies. was Yaakov's specification of Chanoch valid to the exclusion of all the other brothers who are sons of Reuven? And according to this pshat, ain't varv kayom. Why? Because Yaakov has no right to exclude his other grandchildren from his Yerusha. Why? Because it's not a direct Yerusha. Umikevon sheyorash aviyam bekever memel yorshim kulam bikocho. In other words, all of Chanoch's brothers have the same status vis-a-vis the Yerusha of Yaakov, their grandfather, as Reuven, their father. So since Reuven would have inherited his father Yaakov, therefore all of Reuven's sons will inherit Yaakov through their father Reuven. That's the Ramban. Ain't varv kayomim. Okay? And this is going to be the Machne Chaim. Oh, and Rabbi Kivei. The Oseh Shekos Rishonim Sha'odim Yochel Ahanchil Li'ach Bein Ha'achim. Oh, so what are we going to do now with Rishonim, which he's going to quote later on, that hold that a grandfather can specify one of his grandsons, and therefore that grandson will inherit his father to the exclusion of his brothers. Hainu mishum teladaitam yushas av enal mikoach mishmush elam mikoach kurvaso ha'atzis. So now we have a fifth nafkamina to Reb Elchanan's hakira. If we view a direct relationship between the grandfather and the grandson, then the grandfather has the ability, has the rights to exclude all of his other grandsons. But if, on the other hand, any Yerusha of a grandson of his grandfather goes through his father, so then the Yerusha is coming through his father, and the father didn't specify one of the sons, and therefore wouldn't be valid. And this is the way Rabbi Chana wants to answer up the kasha of Rabbi Kiveger. Rabbi Kiveger asks, how could the Rambam say that Yochel Lahanchil Li'ach Bein Ha'achim, that the grandfather could specify one of his grandsons to the exclusion of the others? After Yerusha Sa'ach, he mitam mishmush. Kmo shekos Ramban, b'perusho b'chumish, Rabbi Niyona b'shita b'gubetzes kuf, yud ches, chen mash mitosus reish pirkin, meaning the beginning of Yesh Noklin. How can it be that he can inherit, he can specify the inheritance for one of his grandsons, after all, since it's going through Mishmash Nachla, according to the Ramban, then he and his brothers all have equal rights to this Yerusha, because they're inheriting it from their father, not from the grandfather, says Rav Elchanan, no. The grandfather inherits or bequeaths directly to his grandson, and the son is only there as a hook to link up the grandson with the grandfather. Therefore, the grandfather could be manchil li'ach min ha'ach. Umashek shinu l'malav etikshei hodi en yorish klal eskeno ela es oviv eich milmod mizeh. How can we derive that Ben HaBen is a poter if you hold that the Ben HaBen inherits his father and not his grandfather? Dafilu l'divrei ha'gaonim d'mumar eni yorishes oviv ben ha'mumar yorishes kenu b'dvar tov d'yom mikoch avua di'avu ka'asinon d'chsiv tachas avosecha yiu banecha. So the answer is, the reason why we can derive that ben ha'ben partes from Yibum is because there's a direct relationship between the ben ha'ben and his zaken, as we see in Rabbeinu Simcha, who justifies the fact that even the Ben is a Mumar and he cannot inherit his father, nevertheless his son will inherit his grandfather. V'yomer Nami B'Yushalmi V'yim L'Bno Yadena M'Yado L'Bno V'yeno M'Yado L'Ben B'No. Rebbe Boy Kume Rabzera Gabi nachla at ovid ben aben kiben vimkein tzorch lomar vim ben Ruvain ba mikoch Ruvain in kein encha osa chinuch leinyan nachla kiluhu b'no shal Yaakov el b'no shal Ruvain. So the impression I get is this is all part of the quote from Rabbeinu Simcha. And Rabbeinu Simcha, one of the Rishonim, is quoting Yushalmi about whether or not in the mitzvah of Yud, which means if a man owns a Shivcha, he's allowed to be miyad the Shivcha to his ben, can he be miyad his Shivcha to his ben aben? And Rebbe, Boy Kume Rav Zera, see, I'm not exactly sure who this Rebbe is. He can't be Rav Yudah Nasi because Rav Zera is an Amora. In any event, whoever he is, he had a suffix in front of Rav Zera. Gabi Nachla At Ovid Ben HaBen Keben. In other words, what we're saying is that the Ben HaBen has the status of a Ben, and if that be the case, then just like a person can be miyayed his shivcha to his ben, he could also be miyayed his shivcha to ben haben. And all this Rabbi Elchanan sees as a proof that the relationship between the grandfather and the grandson in Yerusha is direct. And if it is, that's why it should work midin, patering him up from yibum, and in the law of yibum. So for the time being, that's what we're gonna do. This Rabbi Elchanan. Now again, Bli Neder, if we have more time, Rabbi Elchanan goes on with this Chakira as far as Baal Chov is concerned. Okay.
Is it true that you can exclude a son from your Yerusha?
Well, during your lifetime.
Yeah.
I don't know la halacha l'maisa, but there definitely seems to be grounds for that. As long as he's a yorei, she can be manchil leben min abon.
Because it's the whole idea of ben snua.
You mean that?
Lo yivaker ben snua
b'ben. Oh, you're asking about the din of bechar, I think. I think it's halacha. There's a separate halacha in bechar.
But so even though you can't do it for...
Right, you can do it for the pshuta, but not for the bechor. Okay. Now, there's halacha masha kana eved kana rabba. So if you have this book from Rabbi Adler, if you take a look on page Lamed Tes, he has a very interesting chakira on masha kana eved kana rabba. So it means that the eved makes a kinyan, then those nechasim now somehow accrue to the adon. So how does that work? Yesh l'zeh shtei efshariyot. He says you could say that the Eved has the first chus on his own property. However, once he makes that kinyan, then that rechush automatically transfers over to the ownership of the Adon, of his Rav, in which case the Eved here is playing the agency role. He's not what we call the hook, just to connect the rechush with his adon, but rather he himself makes a kinyan, and the adon is only kona through via the agency of his eved. We're talking about an eved knani. An eved ivri has his own kinyan. Oh. Number two, nichsei ha'eved shayochim l'adono miyad. Okay, I would have left out the word miyad, but I would have said yashir. Now that's the way I would prefer to have. Ainli Eved Kinyan. It's not that the Eved makes a Kinyan and then it goes into the Rishus of the Adon. The Adon acquires it through his Eved. No, the Eved is just a hook, and the Adon acquires this through the. No, it's the Adon itself is the Yad HaEved. The Yad HaEved is really the Yad of the Adon. It's not that the Yad HaEved has his own Yad and he becomes an agent on the part of his. Of his adon, v'nira, he says that the nafkemina to this chakira is a sugyan kedushin daf chav gimel, the mishnah daf chav beis on the basis eved knani nikne bekesef ubishtar v'chazaka. Okay, that's not so much relevant to us, but kones atzmo bekesef al yidei acherim. Notice the problem here is that if the Adon wants to be Meshachar his Eved, and he wants to utilize the method of Kinyan Kesef, what it would mean is that the Eved is Kona the Kesef, and thereby he acquires his freedom, his Shichur. But the question is, how could he acquire Kesef when Kol Mashikona Eved Kona Rabba?
Eldon's paying himself.
What do you say?
The Eldon's paying himself.
Right. He says, "V'konis atzmo d'vir Rabbi Meir, v'chachomim omrim b'kesef al yidei atzmo." Not the way Rabbi Meir says it, that it goes into the bailus of Ploni Almoni, of a zar, a third party, and then that third party is zocha on behalf of the Eved, but rather the Adon could give the money over to the Eved directly. And the Gemara says that there's one stipulation, one proviso. According to Chachamim, under what circumstances do the Chachamim allow the Eved to accept Kesef? That's only Kesef Shalachir, but not Kesef of the Adam. Those the Adam instructs so and so to pay money to the Eved. So the Gemara says, "Ubelvad shi'a kesef mishalachirim." What's the machlokas now between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim? Rabbi Meir sofer ein kinyan li Eved below Rabba. Any money that is being received by the Eved is automatically transferred over to the ownership of the master of the Rav. Okay, fine. For Rabbanan Savri, Yesh Kinyan Li Eved below Rabba. What does that mean, Yesh Kinyan Li Eved below Rabba? The Eved could acquire ownership on his own. That's not true. We have a principle called Kol Mashikona Eved Kona Rabba. Omer Rabba, Kuli Alma, Ein Kinyan Li Eved below Rabba. V'Ein Kinyan, fine. That if somebody else wants to say, "I want to be machnit to the Eved," he can do so. And therefore the Eved makes a kinyan on it. Afterwards it goes back to the Adon. But if Almanas, and what happens if he makes a Tanai and he says that the Adon should not acquire any ownership over it, is lo klum, call him away. That's not valid. Rabbanan Savri came to the Omer La Almanas Ahani Le Tnoi. So again, let's go back to the original Machlokas. How is the Eved Konis Atzmo? So according to Rabbi Meir, there's no way that the Adon could be machna the Eved by giving the money over to the Eved, from the Adon directly to the Eved. According to the Chachamim, is the Kesef al Yidei Atzmo, u'bishtar al Yidei Acherim, u'vachi Kesef Mishel Acherim. So what exactly is the Machlokas here? He says, "Harayved pirush the time of the milsa mishum diyad ha'eved yad rabba." That the, if I understand correctly, the Ravid is claiming that the Eved has no yad for himself. His yad is really the Adon's yad. Hilchos Svile the Rabbi Meir came in the Omer leKni. Kani Eved v'Kani Rabba. T'kshenosno li Eved ki ilu nosno li Rabba mamash. So therefore, if I understood correctly, that should not be a shukr. But one second, I'm. Ukshe hisna im a Eved ki ilu hisna im acher vi einzesh kishar t'non vi alma. T'masne im a kabel ma t'on vi atzma. Rabbanan Savri t'mei kora Kani Eved. That it doesn't go directly to the Adon, but rather the Eved makes a kinyan. El dulchi zochi ha'Eved, after the Eved makes his kinyan, zochi ha'Adon mikach zechias ha'eved hilkach shehisna im ha'eved hanali kishar tnoi bi'alma demasli makabu matan bi'atzma kein shekein tnoi kaya. So you make a tonight that this money should go into the rishus of the Eved and not into the rishus of the Adon. Is that tonight valid or not? So that's going to be machlok between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. The Ravid is saying that the reason why, according to Rabbi Meir, that tonight can't be valid is because the Eved has no yad. So you can't be machlok to the Eved and exclude the Adon because the Eved has no yad and the Yad Eved is only the Yad Adon. But according to Chachamim, the Eved has a yad, and after the Eved acquires it, then it accrues to the Adon. So therefore, you can make it Tanai that I want it to stay in the Rishus of the Eved. It's Tanai Kayim. And he says, V'nira de l'shitas harayvid l'das Rabbi Meir ein em tza'i b'mikra zeh. The Eved is not an agent who is being zoch on behalf. In other words, it never enters into the possession of the agent in such a way that then from the Eved it goes back to the Adon, but rather it goes directly to the Adon. So basically, according to Rabbi Meir, the Eved is only a hook linking up the Machne to the Kohen of the Adon. Mashenkin, according to Chachamim, the possessions are acquired first and foremost by the Eved himself. He has his own Yad. And then it's Allah that Kol Mashikana Eved Kana Rabo, and it accrues to the Adon. And an Afkamina is, can somebody give something to an Eved with a Tanai that it'll remain in the possession of the Eved? Well, if the Eved has it, then he can make such a Tanai. But if the Eved never got it, because the Eved is only linking up the Adon with the Machne, then the Tanai is not valid. And last but not least, again, there's a lot more to do, but Lineta will try to finish this up tomorrow, but he has Tashlume Vlados Labal. So the halacha is that there's a principle called Kimle B'Rabin. If somebody kills the mother and she was pregnant, then he's Chayav Misa and he doesn't have to pay Dmei Vlados. So he says this is a machlokas where the Kimlev de Rabine should operate here. Rabbi Nitam wants to establish that Kimlev de Rabine applies even in this case. Now, watch what happens over here. This is called Misa Lezeh V'Tashlum Eliacher. Because he's chayav Misa as a result of the mother that he killed, but he's chayav to pay Tashlume Nezikin to the father because he owns the what's called the Dmei Vlados. Says Rabbi Nitam, even though it's Misa Lezeh, Umam and Lezeh, we still apply the principle of Kimlei Bidarabimi. That's according to Rabbi Nitam. And that you'll see on the top left column, he says, L'kuliyama Misa Lezeh v'tashlum Lezeh potu da Kimlei Bidarabimi potu. Fine. V'omer read the Ein Araya. The reed disagrees with Rabbeinu Tam, and he says, "Kevan davlados hein begufa isha chashiv misa v'tashlum eliyechad." He has some sort of new halacha here that this is not called misa lezeh v'tashlumin liacher. So lechora kasha ma ich paslon davlados hein begufa isha ha tashlumin ein lebaal. He's paying the baal because he's the owner of the Vlados, and that's called Dmei Vlados. What difference it make if the Vlados are part of one goof with the Isha? Because again, according to the Ri, the principle is we don't say Kimlev Rabine in Misa Lezem Amam Lezem Adarabi. You get Misa for this one, and you pay Tashlum to this one. So what difference it make if the Vlados are in and part of the goof Aisha? That should be totally irrelevant, because the Tovea here in the moment is the Baal. And therefore, it should be a case of Misa Lezeh v'Tashlum Lezeh. So he quotes the Rav that Machlokas Ben Rav Tam Ben Ri Nosav, meaning it relates to the definition of Tashlumei Vlados. So Rav Tam Tashlumei Vlados Shaykh La'av B'Ofen Yashir. Who owns the Vlados and the Dom of the Vlados? That's the husband. V'Lachay Nechshav HaMatzah K'Misa Le'isha V'Tashlumei Le'Baila. And that's Rabbeinu Tam, that it's Misal Lizeh v'Tashlumin Lizeh. Why? Because Tashlumin is directly to the father. Avalari me'achar v'avlados hem iguf ha'isha ha'tashlumin magim la'isha v'aval zolcha me'isha. Right, this has to do with the relationship of a ksuba, where anything that acquires to a wife, again, as far as the Karen is concerned, I'm not talking about the payros, but at least as far as the Karen is concerned, it accrues over to the husband. So basically, when the Torah says that the father collects the Beis Vlados, like let's say, for example, where she's alive, forgetting about the case that we're talking about now of Kimle Dravine. So the law is that really the Tashlumin is to the Isha, just that through the halach of Ksuba, the Baal is Zocha from his wife. And if that be the case, then we understand very well why the Re says that this is really Tashlumin u'misal yechad. It's not Misal Lizev, Tashlumin Lizev, because even the Tashlumin really belongs to the Isha. And I think there was to be a tremendous nafkamina here, let's say she was Tovea someone Dvei Vlodos. Does he have a right to say, La Baldvarm Didiat? I don't want to deal with you in court because you have no claim here. I owe it to your husband, not to you. But according to the Re, the Tashlumin really belonged to her. It's just that after she acquires, it goes over to the husband.
No, you mentioned all the brothers to the parents. They were born, so.
Well, the Vlados themselves are goof above because they're worth something, and when they grow up and have children, that would be payros. But they themselves have a value on the market.
The cash to their mother, they're payros. But they're still mukoma.
Yes, since it's part of one goof. Well, no. What we want to know, Daniel, is not the relationship to the mother, but the relationship to the father. Meaning, how does it go from the mother to the father? If she has rights to collect the Dmei Vlados, where does he come into the picture? The answer is, of course, the Vlados are Karen, and he's Zocha the Karen, which I guess you call Nitzei Malu, and then any payers from that Karen, let's say he invested in his profits and dividends, that would accrue to her. So again, let's just summarize the sugyas that we covered today. We spoke about the obligation of a father to teach his grandson Torah, whether that really is his obligation to teach his son, but insofar as his son has a chiv to teach his son, therefore the grandfather teaches his grandfather, or no, it's a direct relation between the grandson and the grandfather. The obligation to be mechabed one's stepmother, does it go through his father? If his father's not alive, he doesn't be mechabed his stepmother. Or no, it becomes a relationship that's direct in and of itself. Then we discuss the case of Nachla, we discuss the case of Yibum, and in all these cases we're always wondering if there's a direct relationship between the grandfather and the grandson. In the case of Nachla, we set up five nafkaminas in Rebbe Chanan. And finally, we discussed the last two cases of Mashakona Eved Kana Rabo and the case of Tashlumei Vlados. Okay, that's where we'll stop for today. Okay, I wish everyone a happy Yom Yerushalayim.